Presley on Mountain Men.
The bears are moving, the bears are hungry.
Tom Orr continued to battle predators stalking his home.
It's gotta be a grizzly.
I'm guessing 300 to 400 pounds.
Wolves aren't something to be messed with. I mean, they could kill you. But when they come onto the property, that's coming a little too close. If the wolf goes to the house, I'm gonna kill it.
While Eustace fought to raise the money needed to defend claims against his land.
They're taking my land. My land is my life.
If I quit, I'm dead.
Hot dog. And Marty continued to deal with winter's fury.
You can't make a mistake when it's that cold.
Blow after blow, fighting to make it home to his buyer's auction.
I have tomorrow. That's it. If I don't get my furs in, I'll miss the shipping date.
Montana's Rocky Mountains, Tom Orr is enduring an early, brutal winter that has blanketed the Yak River Valley with 15 inches of snow. The local grizzlies have delayed their hibernation, and they're still searching for food.
The bears are moving, the bears are hungry.
One recently broke into a pigeon coop in Tom's backyard.
And then he reached in and he killed them and ate them.
And now Nancy's seen evidence that wolves have been stalking their property.
Those are wolf tracks. That scares me.
You get a well up here, track it out.
Been hearing you guys talk about this wolf, so that must be quite a problem here, huh?
We got a lot of wolves. We got probably more than what we need, I think.
They've lost their fear of man. They're starting to live right alongside a man, and that's not a very good deal, really. I mean, when they're not afraid of you, they're going to hurt you.
You don't want wild animals in your yard, in your space. You go outside, you bump into a wolf, you can get killed.
We're gonna go look for a wolf, huh?
Yeah, I think you better stay home. Yeah, you better stay home, I think, yeah. You ready for this?
This is not a safe area, really. You have to pay attention. What do you got?
Oh, there's some track here. We didn't have to go very far at all. We found fresh wolf tracks not very far from the house.
Tom is trying to drive the wolves higher into the Rockies. But just today, one of his neighbors was surrounded by a pack of wolves outside his property.
Hey, Dan Kelly.
Yeah.
Seen any wolves?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 10 of them.
Will and I snowshoed into Dan Kelly's. He usually has a good wolf population that kind of hangs around up in there.
Yeah, I got up in the haymow and throwing down a bale, and damn, all of a sudden they started coming out of everywhere. They're coming over fences and all over. I mean, 10 of them. Horses were kicking them. I mean, they were surrounded. The dogs were getting tumbled. They're just coming.
Within the last decade, there have been 21 wolf-related deaths. And in Montana, the wolf population has grown by 15% in the last year alone.
As I was pulling down on it, one come from behind me, shoom, right past me.
You got 10 wolves. There's 1,000 pounds of wolves running around you.
And I got a shot of one of them finally. All of a sudden, they started easing off, and then they took off.
You got to be some sort of a survivor even just to live up here.
Wolves have become increasingly dangerous because of regulations against hunting them.
Where'd them wolves go after you shot that one?
They took off kind of southwest there, over across Basin Creek, yeah.
Dan pretty much pointed the direction that the wolves went in, and we headed out that way.
Wolves move quickly and can travel up to 50 miles in a day.
Well, listen here, it's pretty close to the house.
Yeah, really. Wolves shouldn't be around your house, you know?
Yeah, right.
Wolves are especially dangerous to track because they travel in packs, and you could easily be surrounded within seconds. While Tom and Will are dealing with predators 2,500 miles away in Triplet, North Carolina, a violent rainstorm has pounded the Blue Ridge Mountains for two straight days.
Never know how a day is going to go. It depends on the weather. Nature is doing what it's going to do. And so we adjust our plans to nature.
Eustace has received a large lumber order from an area contractor that could provide the money he needs to save his land. So after the rain, Eustace needs to make sure Turtle Island is ready to take on the task.
Yeah, this morning I went over to the sink, and the sink is not providing water.
Hello, water. Are you here?
Clean, healthy water is essential for Eustace and his workers. He must get it running again before he can start his lumber order.
There's some dirt got in the system.
If you can't fix the water, for one, it causes a lot of frustration. That's our water. That's where our life comes from.
Then go clean it out.
To fix Turtle Island's water problem, Eustace must make a 2-mile hike up the mountain in order to reach the water's source.
I don't know how most people fix their water or whatever. Maybe they call a plumber or something, but I just go up the water line and start shaking or looking and find out what's wrong.
Eustace has to fix his water system quickly. Water is the life's blood of Turtle Island.
Now, water is sacred. Water is the life source. It's the blood of the mother. Without this, nobody lives. And this water here just comes out of a hole in the ground. Flows downhill. Always does, always will. You can do this too. Primitive people all around the world, all the mountain people do this. It's gravity power. You know, this up being up on the mountain, it comes down the hill. So you got pressure, and you got the movement, and then the pressure comes out through here, goes in the top of this one, and you got a 50-gallon reservoir with pressure coming out the bottom, and that goes down to the shop, and that's our water. That's where our life comes from. It's paid for. It's on tap. I mean, what can you say?
Eustace must find and remove the blockage in the water system, or Turtle Island will be without fresh drinking water.
Let's see. There we go. I think it's just a bunch of stuff stuck up in there. Yeah, there's some muck down in there.
If this doesn't work, Eustace would have to dig up over 2 miles of pipe to find and clear the blockage. And with the new lumber order looming, he can't afford to waste time.
Overcoming challenges is part of life. Whatever problem we come upon, we just keep working at it tenaciously until we get it fixed.
While Eustace works to keep Turtle Island running, 4,300 miles northwest in Alaska, Marty Maiorato has spent the last 2 days trying to get back home.
Nothing.
He has faced a difficult season and had little return.
Well, we've probably come 20 miles. I wouldn't want to have to run that many miles to catch one marten all the time.
He's supposed to be delivering his pelts to a buyer in 8 hours.
If I don't get my furs in, I'll miss the final shipping date.
And he has hit a snag.
This is the way it always works. Plan on flying out today.
A winter storm is hovering in the mountains just 5 miles southwest, blocking his path home.
Weather and flying, they don't mix, so that's the one thing I got to worry about.
Marty has made it back to his cabin. But given how unpredictable the weather has been, Marty is bear-proofing his cabin to protect it if he cannot return.
I've seen some big grizzly tracks. So
the last thing I need to do is board up the cabin in case the neighbors come by and mess stuff up.
Grizzly bears, they like to tear into your cabins a lot of the times, but they do chew on people, so that's a different situation.
If you get winter bears, and they're usually the most dangerous because they're up for a reason. So the whole idea behind bear shutters is to make it look like there isn't a window.
They're naturally curious, I guess. If a bear really wants to get in your cabin, he'll get in your cabin.
You can see, you know, these are bear tracks. Those are bear muddy toe prints.
Adult grizzly bears can weigh up to 1,000 pounds going into hibernation season. They lose about half their weight during winter months. But even at 500 pounds, the animals are extremely powerful.
It's just a board full of nails. And you can see some are bent, so a bear stepped on them.
By bear-proofing the cabin, Marty is able to leave supplies inside.
As you can see, there's nails sticking out here. So if a bear jumps up and puts his paws on the nails, hopefully that'll make him not want to put his paws up there anymore.
Bears have 5-inch long claws, so if they really want to get in, they will.
The more hassle it is for him, the more of a reason he's got to have to do it. I'd like to think I'm thinking like a bear, but who knows? And that's it.
Marty's been stuck at his cabin 2 days longer than he originally planned, so he must make a fresh water run before he flies. And with all the signs of bears in the area, he must be prepared.
If I run into a bear, the first thing I'm going to do is try and scare him off, or hopefully he runs off. If he starts coming at me, there's no, this is what you do when a bear jumps, because every situation is going to be different.
Marty must make his water run quickly, but the new snowfall has made the trail uneven.
The issue is where the trail is hard, and where the trail isn't, it's usually soft. So it's almost like being on this tightrope. You're balancing, trying to stay up on this hard trail.
Struggles to avoid the local predators.
Pretty damn fresh, too. You never know where they're gonna be or how long they're gonna stay.
You hear the howl?
While Eustace works to keep Turtle Island running.
Oh my gosh.
What happened?
It went off. It's the water power generator.
High above the Arctic Circle, in Alaska, daylight is getting scarce. Marty has been flooded with problems. With bad weather and poor trail conditions, a polar night approaches.
7 minutes a day this time of year. Each day is 7 minutes shorter.
This time of year, a polar night is common. It's when the sun is up for the least amount of time. And in some parts of the state, there is virtually no sun for as much as 67 days.
I'm trying to use this daylight, and then as it starts getting dark, I'm almost panicked, but I'm like, I gotta go.
Marty has been hoping to fly for the past 8 hours, and the deadline for the fur auction is today. But with daylight fading fast, Marty might not make it.
Ow! This is all I need.
And the crash will cost him even more time.
I am righteously stuck now. All right, I gotta dig out of this. So this is gonna be a pain. This is the way it always works. You think you got something, a quick, short, easy run, and you end up taking you all day. I planned on flying out today, but it's like driving on a tightrope because the trail's packed up high, but the snow, the sugar snow, goes all the way to the ground. My glasses are getting fogged. Get sweaty, and I always take my glasses off. What I'm trying to do here is just get a packed trail so that I can make a run and get out of this. And this is all sugar snow, so it's kind of a pain. Hopefully this doesn't happen anymore.
With no one around to help for hundreds of miles, Marty cannot afford another setback.
My glasses. Oh, crap. I put them on the snow machine dash, you know, because it's warm there and they unfog. But then when I took off, I forgot to grab them. Another twist of fate.
Marty is virtually blind without his glasses. Driving the snowmobile will be difficult. Piloting a plane will be impossible.
This ain't the first time I've lost glasses like this. Here they are. Oh, I ran over them. They must have got caught in the crack. They're shot. Without my glasses on, it's just going to make things more difficult.
Marty was hoping for a break in the weather so he could fly out today. But he still needs to head back to the cabin. Without his glasses, he'll be moving slow and burning up even more time.
It's just like losing a hitch pin on a sled. It's not something you think about until you don't have them. Now that I ain't got them, it's just a bad situation.
Marty has no choice but to push forward, hoping he can find a way to get home.
I'm going to do everything in my power to get there, but I'm worried that it's going to be pretty miserable.
If he doesn't make it, his winter spent working the trap line will be in vain. While Marty races to the plane, in Montana's Yak River Valley, Tom and Will continue to track a local pack of wolves.
Will and I snowshoed into Dan Kelly's. He usually has a good wolf population.
Where'd them wolves go after you shot that one?
They took off kind of southwest there, over across Basin Creek, yeah.
Dan pretty much pointed the direction that the wolves went in, and we headed out that way.
This is winter here in the Yak, and we never know what we're going to get.
All right, maybe we're finding something now.
Wolves have been a protected species in Montana since 1974. Since then, the animals have become bold and less afraid of man, making them extremely dangerous. As a result, Tom must force this pack off his land and higher up the mountain.
See him here?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a male. You see where he walked up and peed it?
Right.
When you see a wolf track and you compare it to a dog track, it's a wolf or it's a St. Bernard. They're very, very impressive. It's a good size one.
Pretty nice track, so.
Yeah, and they're pretty damn fresh, too.
Seems like we're pretty close, huh?
Yeah, yeah, really. These are all pretty fresh. Did you hear the howl?
Yeah. That was a wolf, wasn't it?
A wolf. It'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
The biggest danger with wolves is they stalk their prey in packs. And together, they are able to kill prey as large as an 1,800-pound moose.
Well, we know they're here somewhere, right?
We know they're here.
Tom and Will are desperately trying to push these animals far into the mountains. They hope by scaring them, they can force them off his property for good.
If they get spread out too far, then they communicate with calls.
It really can make chills run up through your body. Because you know they're right there. They're talking to each other about you, or maybe they're talking to you.
But if they don't succeed, eventually the wolves will come back.
We kind of know the direction he's moving in now.
Well, yeah, at least he's getting out of here, you know?
Right.
I mean, he's moving away. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm glad we found the tracks, and it looked like it might be a storm blowing in anyway, huh?
With a storm brewing, Tom's done what he can to push them away from his property and back into the mountains. Let's just hope they stay there. 2,500 miles away in North Carolina, Eustace Conway is battling a very different opponent, time. He has wasted precious daylight in an attempt to fix Turtle Island's water supply.
Seems like it's stuck.
Time spent on the repair is time away from the countless jobs needed to sustain Turtle Island, including his new lumber order.
There's some water. All right.
Let's see if this thing works.
If you can't fix the water, for one, it causes a lot of frustration. You gotta have something to drink and something to clean with. And water is primary, so we make sure we get our water running.
Oh yeah, problem solved.
Good stuff. Got my water running again now.
With the water supply restored, Eustace can turn his attention to the more pressing matters. Most importantly, the lien that's been placed on his property.
They're taking my land. I don't even know how to wrap my head around that I'm being subjected to this attack.
But fighting the lien is a costly battle.
We don't have much of a cash flow. I live on less than $2,000 a year, so it's real important to be able to have that little bit.
To raise the necessary funds, he's fired up an old 1925 sawmill that sits on his property.
We're taking trees that grew here, and we're sawing them into lumber, and then we're going to sell it.
This is a heavy job, and Eustace will need the help of one of his workers, Peter.
When Eustace asked me to help with the sawmill, I'm kind of excited about that. It can be pretty hard work, but it's pretty cool to me, old-timey, big old round sawmill.
The sawmill is run by a hydropower system that Eustace designed himself.
We have water that's falling down a mountain, and it goes to a little generator.
And by using a little mountain man ingenuity, Eustace is able to make enough power to run his sawmill.
So instead of like a gas-powered generator, it's a water-powered generator, so the falling water makes electricity.
The water pressure from the creek powers a turbine, which creates the electricity needed to power the saw. The saw's 5-foot blade allows Eustace to cut long pieces of lumber into sellable boards for local contractors.
So I'm just looking at what we're going to saw there. Anything that's 10 feet long we'll probably use.
Just this week, Eustace got an order for 1,000 boards from a local contractor.
One thing Eustace emphasizes is just working intelligently. And he expects a lot of me because I've been doing it for a while and he's trained me on it.
The job is strenuous and will require Eustace and Peter to use all 6 hours of remaining daylight.
See if you can help me guide it to the right place here. We're going to roll it this way just a little bit. Woo! That's what we want.
With the saw running at full steam, things look on schedule, even with the water setback earlier in the day.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Have you turned on or hit the electricity or anything?
What happened?
It went off.
The lack of power could mean Eustace will miss his deadline. With only hours left before the order needs to be filled, he could be in serious trouble.
Something's not working with the electric system.
If Eustace doesn't get this fixed, he'll risk losing money and Turtle Island. Carolina, Eustace Conway's land sits next to the Cherokee National Forest. What makes the area unique is that more rain falls here than anywhere else in the country except the Pacific Northwest, making it the perfect place to run a water-powered turbine, like the one Eustace uses to power his antique sawmill.
What we do on our homemade power system is basically just tapping in, like literally tapping into the creek.
See if you can help me guide it to the right place.
But water power is unusually unreliable. And it has stopped working.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Have you turned on or hit the electricity or anything?
What happened?
It went off.
Something's not working with the electric system.
A major problem, since he must fill an order of 1,000 boards for a local contractor by the end of the day.
We got a problem. We have no power being made.
To be able to sell that wood keeps me going. I mean, I'm right on the edge of not being able to survive financially and keep Turtle Island going.
With a lien against his property due to come up in court soon, the money from the sawmill job is key in Turtle Island's survival.
See that gauge in there? We got about 15. That's not going to do it.
No.
So let's go up and explore the top and see what we've got going on up there. We had to go figure out why it wasn't working.
Eustace has hiked 2 miles from the mill to the water source higher on the mountain. With over 20 years in wilderness, he's become a master at troubleshooting.
I think that white pipe is clogged up a little bit.
Eustace has spent all of his life without electricity and understands that having it is still a luxury.
There's a stick behind you. Try that stick right there.
The intake pipe was clogged right at the source. It's kind of important that we get it fixed because Eustace's power depends on that.
Oh, shoot, I lost the stick.
Peter has found the blocked pipe, but a broken stick means the clog could be too thick to remove without digging the pipe out and replacing it.
See if you can pull that broken stick out of there.
Every minute wasted is money lost for Eustace. He needs this system up and running.
I lived for about 30 years without electricity, and I liked it pretty well. I just about liked it better than I do having electricity, because you didn't have to worry about all this stuff. There's some leaves. It's coming through now. All that stuff was keeping our water from coming through the pipe. If you can get in there
and pull the pipe forward and stick it up against there, and we'll put a few rocks on it. And the true test will be if it works down there, if the gauge comes up at the pump, and then also if it gets power over to the shop.
After a 30-minute hike back to the shop, Eustace will need to test the sawmill to see if it works.
Those logs are critically important. That's survival.
Over in the Rocky Mountains of Montana, Tom Orr is continuing his battle with the harsh winter. The accumulated snowfall of 81 inches is far above the normal for this time of year.
Time to get old Betsy started here.
We're getting a little low on firewood again. It's getting on into the year. We've been burning a lot of wood here lately.
Temperatures in the Yak can drop to 20 degrees below zero.
You have got to get that wood in because you're not going to make it here if you're not warm.
And since the Orrs heat their home using only wood, they need a large amount of it to make it through the winter.
Will and I, we're going to crank up the old snowmobile and we'll get the sled out.
Using a snowmobile and sled, Tom is able to cut and haul enough wood to last for about 2 weeks.
If we can make it to March, by March, most of the snow is starting to melt.
Right. Are you getting ready for this?
Yeah.
I came up to help Tom a little bit with his firewood. There's no charity involved in this at all. Tom can take care of himself.
I'm going to put these snowshoes on, and then I'll just kind of follow your trail up there.
Or else I can set you in the sled and pull you.
All right, you gotta walk.
After their recent encounter with a local wolf pack, Nancy is hesitant for Tom to go alone.
Well, when Nancy talks about being nervous, I really pay attention. Nancy had seen these wolf tracks.
That looks like a big track. I wonder if those are wolf tracks. That scares me.
Can't say I ain't gonna go out in the woods and cut no trees, because that's dangerous. I mean, we've gotta have firewood.
And in the remote mountains, nothing motivates more than basic need.
That's just one of the things that you gotta have in the back of your mind, especially when you spend as much time out in the woods as what we do.
When you look at wolves and you think about the danger that you can face, it's kind of scary sometimes. But at the same time, if you don't have the firewood, then it's gonna be a tough winter for you.
Well, this is it. Ain't very big. It'll burn for a few days.
Yeah.
All right.
When Tom fell that tree, I was really watching out for it, trying to get back, trying to be out of the way. And at the same time, I was worrying about him because he's right up under it. You never know what's going to happen.
Oh.
Need me to help you?
Yeah, give me a lift here.
Just keep holding it. Oh, there she goes.
It sounded like a wolf.
After spending days pushing the wolves into the mountains, it appears they have returned.
It'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
High above the Arctic Circle in Alaska, Marty has been struggling for the last 8 hours to hit his deadline to his buyer, who is hundreds of miles in town. But a snowmobile accident left his glasses damaged, and he has had to make a blind run to his plane to try to find his spare set.
Not having glasses is just like losing a hitch pin on a sled. It's not something you think about until you don't have them.
Marty can barely manage to maneuver his snowmobile without his glasses, but flying will be too difficult. Because he flies without navigation instruments, his sight is the only thing that guides him.
Whew, that was more work than I thought it'd be. All right, let's see if I can find my specs.
His only hope is that he has a spare set in his plane.
And I've been in a lot of bad situations. Without my glasses on, it's just going to make things more difficult. Well, crap, they're gone.
If Marty can't find his glasses, he'll miss the deadline and could be stranded out here for weeks.
I just cannot believe this. This is so aggravating. Yeah. That's much better. I can see again. I trust I'm still the ugliest son of a that ever lived.
Now with a new pair of glasses, Marty must get back to the cabin to load up his furs.
Here's my Martin. And my cats.
Marty has spent 3 long months trapping and preparing this fur for auction. A setback here could mean Marty will return home empty-handed.
Everything's a calculated risk, but I'm not going to take unnecessary ones. I feel good. I'm excited. I think I'm going to make it. You know, this whole bush living, it's inherently risky.
In the extreme cold, metal weakens and engines shut down.
All right, I'm going to fire up. Come on, honey. Come on, sweetheart. I want to get going here.
After 8 weeks sitting in 2 feet of snow, the plane won't ignite.
No, she's not firing.
Not far from Alaska's Arctic Circle, Marty Maiorato has had a rough season. From snowmobile problems to brutal snowstorms, nothing has seemed to go his way. The latest problem is a flooded plane engine.
No, she's not firing.
And with only 4.5 hours left to make his 3-hour flight home, time is quickly slipping away.
Let's see what the problem is here. Everything looks good. I'm sure it's flooded. When it's flooded, what I need to do is push the gas out of the cylinders. I just spin the engine backwards, and that pushes the excess fuel out of the cylinders. And it'll push it back down through the carburetor. He's a runner! When I leave here, I know how long it is to fly home. When it gets dark, you can't see, so you can't fly. I mean, you might be able to see a horizon, but I can't land in the dark for sure.
The delayed start means the weather report Marty got before coming to the plane may no longer be any good.
If you're flying into something and you go, boy, if this doesn't work, I'm screwed, you already are screwed. I have to leave so I have enough light to get home, but I don't have the instruments in the plane to fly at night. You lose sight of the horizon, you're going to get vertigo and you're going to crash.
After 20 years of fighting the force of Alaska's winters, he knows what he's in for.
There's an old saying, there's old pilots and there's bold pilots, but there's no old bold pilots because they die. I have something I want to accomplish. I almost never accomplish it the way I want to, but I'm going to do everything in my power to get there.
After a 3-hour flight, Marty is ready to begin his landing. He has less than 2 hours to pack his furs and get to his buyer.
Anytime you're landing, there's always an element of risk because if you land on a lake or a river, there could be overflow, there could be a stump under the snow. There could be something. You know, you want to pick a spot that's a good spot to land. You don't want to miss something, then you got problems.
With the sun setting, Marty is running out of time. He needs to get his furs loaded and get on the road.
These are all Martin here. It's like, oh boy, and all you trapped to sell your fur, but then when you go to sell it, it's like, they don't know the misery sometimes you go through to get it. As far as catching fur, there's no average. Some years I catch a couple, some years I catch a lot. There's no constant out here. There are times when I feel like, you know, what are you doing? I mean, everybody's gonna have doubt like that, no matter what they're doing. Of course, we can always break down in the truck. That's the way it's working for me this year.
While Marty races to get to his buyer, 4,300 miles away in North Carolina, Eustace battles to fix his hydro system.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that white pipe is clogged up a little bit. There's some leaves. Yeah, all that stuff was keeping our water from coming through the pipe. The true test will be the gauge comes up at the pump and if it gets power over to the shop.
Now with the pipe unclogged, he needs to get his sawmill back up and running.
We desperately need the money.
Those logs are critically important. That's survival.
Eustace has only 5 hours of daylight left to complete the 1,000 boards of lumber. He needs this to work.
So now let's see if the fruits of our labor will reveal. Yes! We got it. We got it working.
With the problem fixed, they quickly get back to work.
All right, power. We're back in.
4 hours later, and with 30 minutes to spare, they cut the last board.
All right, folks, we did it. Can y'all believe that?
We worked all together, and we made it happen.
Man, we are done.
While Eustace finishes up his work, 2,500 miles away in Montana, Tom Orr has been battling wolves all day.
That sounded like a wolf. When you hear the wolf, especially a pack, it'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Now, wolves aren't something to be messed with. I mean, they can kill a person.
But this time, the need for wood outweighs his need for safety. If Tom wants to stay warm the rest of the winter, he will have to work quickly.
When I hear that wolf howl, I mean, you know you've got to find cover because the wolves are going to be coming.
Living out here in the bush like this, we're going to come in contact with wolves. That can be a pretty spooky thing. They're a pretty large animal. A couple people that I've heard that's been killed by wolves have been killed not very long ago.
With the temperature beginning to drop, Tom and Will managed to make it back with their firewood. The wood that they gathered should keep Tom and Nancy warm for the next month.
So we go through a lot of wood. We cut about most of the year.
But with wolves still near the house, Tom and Nancy will have to stay alert. In the rugged country of Montana, Tom Orr has spent the day pushing the wolves away from his property. But while gathering wood, he heard them from a distance, and he thinks that they're getting closer. Lately, they have been on the prowl, a menace to everyone around him, and through his efforts, he's hoping his family is a little bit safer.
That sounded like a wolf. Here comes Ellie home, she must have heard it too. Did you hear a wolf, Ellie? They'd eat you fast. You better stick around.
But he's come to a simple realization.
They'll be back. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, wolves are wherever wolves are. You never know where they're going to be or how long they're going to stay. You know, we just got to live with that. And we'll live with these wolves.
That's just the way you have to live in the mountains. While Tom keeps an eye out for wolves, up north in Alaska, Marty Maiorato has finally reached home. But now he has less than 2 hours to pack his furs and get to the buyers.
We can always break down in the truck. That's the way it's working for me this year. There's still opportunity for things to go wrong.
With the money from the furs going directly toward feeding his family, missing the auction is not an option. If the fur trade is closed, it will be months before Marty can get his furs into the next auction.
Hey, hey there Joe. He is. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
I'm Joe Maddy, and myself and my wife, Sandra, we own Alaska Raw Fur Company.
Several trappers kind of take turns at being the last guy through the door, yeah, but this year it was Marty.
How's it going?
Well, you're just like regular, you know, last guy in. Marty traps in Alaska, and we're the receiving station for the fur harvesters auction in North Bay, Ontario. Need some help getting that stuff in?
Yeah, if you wanna. This is kind of the culmination of a whole winter's worth of work, so I always like coming here and seeing the fur, you know. This is the first time I get to see it in bright light, see how good it is or bad it is.
Got your license handy, Marty?
Yep.
I have to list each tag number, measure.
It's 38.
Find out where it was caught, when it was caught, how it was caught.
Joe will count and then price each piece. While some of it depends on size, most of what goes into pricing is subjective and is out of Marty's control.
This one obviously is much larger. It's way better furred. This one, the color you can see, it's a real brown down here. It's a better than average, what we would call like a B color.
You know, you're working all winter for this fur, and then to see it go away, it's almost kind of hard to see it go away. You know, you work hard to get all this fur together, and then to see it, and then it gets packed up and chipped away.
Trapper like Marty, he handles this stuff with pride. He puts a lot of, you know, work, extra work into it. He does everything right as far as that's concerned.
Joe knows what it's like to battle the elements to try and make a living on the trap line.
You have lots of fun with breakdowns this year?
Oh, I broke down more this year than all the years combined, I think. You know, it was just one thing after another. It was just on and on. Oh, I just quit. It sounded like electrical. Those steering things. I broke one of those this year. This really sucks. I smacked a tree with the tail of my ski and it broke. I'm gonna have to start looking for more beaters just for the parts because I used them all up. It was just one thing after another. Crap! Yeah, it was my breakdown year.
After an hour of evaluating and measuring Marty's take, Joe doesn't have good news.
You know, so Marty's fur is up to the market. And we just don't know from one year to the next how that's going to be. And Marty, this is all you get.
Marty takes it in stride, but the $4,000 is a third of what Marty has made in the past. Once he subtracts expenses, he's barely broken even for the season.
All right, Joe.
Hey, appreciate the business, yeah?
You bet. I have a goal, obviously. I have something I want to accomplish, but I screwed up on this one.
With all of Marty's setbacks and a lower than average fur count, Marty has come up short, making the rest of this year even more difficult.
It's going to be miserable, but I'm going to make it.
Now Marty will need to hunt longer and harder for food and the furs he needs in order to make up for this setback.
That's what survival is all about, is just if you need to do something to survive, you do it.
Next time on Mountain Men.
That is not my people.
A poacher stalks Eustace's land.
There's fresh sign all over the place in here.
He's baiting, out of season, on my land.
Forcing him to take the law into his own hands.
We don't take trespassing lightly.
Yeah, there he is. Hey! Let's see if we can cut him off at the road.